Welcome to the Rochambeau Show. That is music's Rochambeau. Thank you very much. We have a very special guest with us here today. Television's Todd Robert Anderson.
Hi, glad to be here.
It's good to see you, man.
It's called what?
What's that?
The Rochambeau Music Show? Is that
the Rochambeau Show?
I think. Oh, okay, it's a great
name. But I'm music's Rochambeau.
You're music's Rochambeau.
Yes.
Oh, so you host a show called Music. It's weird because my people that booked me on this thing told me it was called the Toncast or something like that.
Oh, really? No.
It's called the Rochambeau. They always tell me the wrong names.
I show up.
I'm a professional.
You're a good sport.
Yeah, I'm a great sport.
You are.
Yeah.
I have a few things I want to kind of talk to you about and see where you are on these things. And I think the world would like to know the answers to these questions.
I would love to hear these questions. It's very exciting.
It's exciting to have you here. So my first question is, what is your earliest sexual memory?
My earliest sexual memory?
Yes, earliest.
It was probably in the school bus. I remember getting my first boner.
The vibration
in
of the bus?
A school bus, yeah. I think I went over a bump, like a speed bump or something. And I got a boner, and I was like, wow!
How old were you?
I don't know. I was probably 12, maybe? 11? I don't know.
Earliest sexual memory, is it 12?
That's what I remember, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty late, I would think.
Well, maybe, I don't know. Well, I guess I was, when I was even younger, I was kind of hot for babysitters. But I it's hard to say. I mean, it was definitely, there was a sexual element, but I wouldn't call it my first sexual memory where I was aware of the sexuality of it.
Right.
I just really liked cute teenage babysitters when I was little. But
has much changed?
Well,
say yes to that.
Yes, of course. I don't enjoy horseplay anymore.
So, a follow-up question to that is, what's your most recent sexual memory?
I vaguely remember having sex this morning.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did.
Were you alone or?
Nope, pretty sure there was somebody else there. Yeah, pretty sure.
Really? After a late night?
It was a late night.
You came home, got some sleep?
Got a little bit of sleep, yeah.
Woke up.
Morning.
And then?
Morning sex, that's what it was.
Bam, bam, huh?
It was good times.
Awesome.
It's good times.
Do you prefer morning or night sex? Or does it really not matter?
Yeah, I like sex at all times.
All times.
I'm an all-time sex guy.
All the time is a good time for sex?
Anytime is a good time. I don't think all the time would be good, because quite honestly, I think I'd get tired if it was all the time. Yeah, because I would want to stop and eat, maybe have a nap.
That makes sense.
And drink some water.
Maybe have a pinbar sandwich.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a husband.
Yes, I am.
You're a father.
I am.
And you're an actor.
I am all of those things.
How's that work out for you?
It's a dicey proposition to be a father and a husband and an actor.
Okay.
Yeah, unless, you know, you're a movie star. There's not a lot of financial security in the acting profession. So it's, you know, it's tricky. But thus far, you know, more or less kept our
heads
above water. Yeah, yeah.
You're still guesting on programs?
Yeah, people call me into podcasts all the time.
All the time?
People really like interviewing me.
So somehow you're pulling it off, right?
Somehow, yeah. Yeah, somehow I pull it off.
You keep working?
Yeah.
What's your most recent work? What have you done recently?
I did an episode of a show called The X's.
The X's?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that.
It's a show on TV Land about a bunch of exes, I guess. I don't know. I didn't read the script. I played a part in one episode. I think it's the fourth episode, maybe. And I played, the character's name was Man on Elevator.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Were you funny?
I was hilarious.
Were you?
I really...
You killed
I imagine there will be a spinoff show called Man on Elevator. And it'll just be, you know, me
you
on an elevator.
Being, meeting people as they go in and out?
And just, yeah, just talking to people in the elevator. Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah, it'll be really exciting. In some episodes, like very special episodes, they'll, like, someone will be molested on the elevator. And some episodes will be, like, the elevator will get stuck. You know, maybe there's a
two great episodes.
There's right a building there. Fire. That's my maybe just one episode, but a two-parter. It's like if someone gets stuck in the elevator and then they realize that someone's molesting someone in the elevator. It's really crowded.
And the building catches on fire.
Yeah. This is a very special episode.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's socially relevant. A lot of people will watch it. That Blossom show. You remember Blossom?
Oh, of course.
She had very special episodes.
She did have very
where
special.
Where someone would get molested or something. And,
oh,
and people would
teach
would go,
us a lesson.
Yeah, would teach us a lesson. The realities of life.
You're going to teach lessons by people getting molested in your elevator.
Yes, that's
awesome
a good
idea.
Lesson. Yeah, it's a good lesson.
And now I see why you're a writer. Yeah. Always thinking.
Always on Always top thinking. Of it. Yep.
So, Colby is your son.
Yes, he is.
Fine young man
he's
so
a,
far.
Yes, he's a 36-year-old. He's a very fine.
Fine young man. So when he grows up and looks back on the way he was raised by, with, of course, mother and father, but as looking at you as his father, he looks back, what do you think will be the thing that he will hold against you the most?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think he will praise you the most for?
Well, I think... he'll probably criticize us because I imagine he'll be a you know really successful businessman and will become part of the top 1% of the country. So I think he'll you know be angry about me for the way we raised him politically. You know to be more liberal, he'll hate us for that. and he won't talk to us anymore because he'll be, you know, he'll be very extremely right and we'll remain, you know, pretty much the way we are and he'll stop talking to
us. Will you stop talking to him too?
No. We'll keep reaching out. We'll keep reaching out.
He just won't reach back.
No, he won't. But he will be glad for the, I think mostly for the sandwiches.
He'll look back at lots of really good sandwiches.
Yeah, and he'll be torn, you know, when he'll
politics,
think, boy,
sandwiches.
It should be nice to get Dad to make me a sandwich, but he's a lefty.
That's right.
So forget that.
No more commie sandwiches.
Yeah, no commie sandwiches.
Okay, so, you know, as I'm sure you've discussed on many of your interviews that you do, and I know earlier I heard you talk about this a little bit, is you've written two books.
Yes.
My favorite is Don't Act.
Yes.
101 Reasons Why Not to Become an Actor.
Yeah, why you shouldn't, yeah.
What was your inspiration for writing this book, and who should read this book?
I was inspired to write the book because as an actor, and when you get into acting, everybody tells you that how tough showbiz is, but they don't really go into specifics. It's just sort of an accepted thing. And I wanted to write a book using my experiences to make it absolutely clear to anyone who's either interested in becoming an actor or is just curious about what it is, what it means to be an actor. They could read it and go, oh, wow, this is – why would you do this?
Right.
You know?
So it's kind of like if you read that and you still want to do it, then you are truly inspired to be an actor.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that if – you know, it's pretty much any actor – will say, you know, if there's anything else you can do that will make you happy, you should do that.
Right.
But if acting is the only thing that you can see making you happy, then, you know. But the point of the book is, yeah, you're going to do that if you're going to do that, but understand that it probably won't make you ludicrously happy.
Right.
Even
or
though
wealthy.
It's the only thing that you want to do. Yeah, it's definitely not going to make you wealthy.
Is that the thing
you're
is that what you do best? Are you better writing, do you think, and coming up with ideas, or actually acting, or do you?
I think I'm a better actor than I am a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I think, as far as coming up with ideas, I think I'm okay. I'm not as good a writer because you know my writing isn't always as well constructed as a more professional writer's writing would be.
I don't feel that way. I thought you're easy to read.
And, well, thank you.
Well, it's easy to read. Flowed well and kept me interested. And,
well, thank you. That's good. Well, maybe I'm a great writer.
I've seen your acting.
It's not. Yeah, it's. Well, it's all subjective, really.
Yes, it is.
It's all subjective.
No, you're a fine actor.
Oh, thank you.
So, speaking of that, did you? I know, you know, we've been friends for a while, and you know, over conversation, you've talked about you realized early on that when you acted, it's like, oh, this is the thing I can do well. You realize, hey, there's something I can do.
Yeah, that's more it. It wasn't that this is something I can do well, but it's something that I can do. Is that's yeah? When I was a kid, I actually couldn't do anything. And then when I found acting, I was like, oh, this is something I can do in between meals.
Right. So you actually went to NYU.
I did.
To perfect your craft.
Yeah.
But looking back on that experience, do you feel your craft got perfected, or do you think you would have been just pretty much the same actor had you gone or not?
I think, I think there's good and bad to, you know, studying theater and acting. I think, yeah, I'm a better actor for it, I suppose. But, you know, you can also develop new habits that aren't, you know, really conducive to an actual work environment.
Right.
You know? I mean, the method is, you know, if you're a method actor and you're constantly in character on set, you're annoying everyone around you.
Right.
And that's sort of one of those things that they push in acting school.
Do they?
So I took a lot of stuff and I left a lot of stuff.
Right.
But, you know, I'm certainly glad I went, because no one will hire you in movies, film, or in theater if you don't have a degree.
That's sarcasm.
That is sarcasm, yes.
I see.
There is no need to get a degree in acting. It's a waste of cash.
But college was a good experience for you.
Oh, I certainly loved college and loved living in New York City. Yeah, it was great. I loved it.
Well,
but awesome. Professionally speaking,
right,
it's done me no good at right. all. It was just a 4-year kind of vacation, I guess. It
which was kind of awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I learned stuff, but
right.
you know, it does. You know, nobody. No, you don't go on an audition for Man on Elevator and they go, well, you're doing well with the text that we wrote, but can you do a Shakespearean monologue and explain to us the finer points of Italian Commedia dell'arte?
That's right. And can I see your transcript?
Yes. How many Lotzis can you do? You know, they don't. Can you let's concentrate on your breathing now. They don't do that. It's
none of that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I kind of went off a little bit here, but that's good. It's conversation.
Yeah, it's conversation. It's real interview. It's a laid-back interview style.
So every Wednesday night, you have a men's night out where a group of hand-selected men get together, drink cognac, and smoke Peruvian cigars and watch 70s pornography.
Uh-huh.
And I'm happy to be a part of that group.
Yeah.
What made you come up with that whole scenario? Why do we do that?
I love getting men together to watch pornography together as men.
As men?
That's when I'm most comfortable around men
while watching
pornography. That's when I feel completely at home.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And why 70s? Why is that?
I think 70s pornography is more artful than modern pornography. A lot of it was shot on film. There were stories. They wrote stories. It was a real renaissance, you know. The Devil and Miss Jones is a marvelous picture about, you know, a woman who leads a chaste life and then basically commits suicide out of boredom, and then, you know, she gets to go and do all the things that she didn't get to do in life
while dead,
before going to hell, because the guy who runs hell, who's this white dude with a big desk, is basically like, well, you were really good, but you killed yourself, so you have to go to hell. But I'll tell you what, why don't you take, you know, a few days and go do all the sinning that you didn't do, and then it won't be such a waste, you know. And that's better than most studio pictures that come out these days.
Sinning was basically having sex.
Yeah, well, it was a porn film, so
right.
Yeah,
she just didn't, took a while.
It wasn't about I should have killed a bunch of people, which is another way to go.
Seems like a long way to go to get to porn, but
the first act of that film is immense and long, and there's no pornography in it. Yes, it takes a long time to get there. I wouldn't call it bad. Just the pacing is a little bit. It's a little bit slow. They could have picked up the pacing a little bit in the.
Is that your favorite 70s porn?
No.
No,
my favorite 70s porn is probably Behind the Green Door.
Oh.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
That's a movie about starring Marilyn Chambers, formerly the Ivory Snow Girl.
Yes.
And she gets kidnapped, which is terrible. No one, you should never kidnap a woman. But this is sexual fantasy.
You're against kidnapping?
So I'm against kidnapping.
Okay.
I'm firmly against it. But I think it's okay in your, fantasy pornography movies. But she gets kidnapped and then she's brought on an erotic journey, which is basically she like does a sex show in front of a bunch of people in some kind of weird sex club. And she has sex with a bunch of ladies and a big... big fella.
You say big fella, you mean
a big fella. And then all the people who are watching have like an orgy and stuff, and then there's like there's psychedelic like semen shots, like semen flying through the air in psychedelic colors.
That's so awesome.
And that's not, you don't get that much anymore in pornography.
You don't. Do you remember the first time you watched pornography?
Yeah, I think the first time I watched pornography was like a friend of mine had a Tracy Lords movie on a VHS tape and was like, "Hey, I got a Tracy Lords movie on a VHS tape." And
how old were you then?
I don't know, probably 12, 13. Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, and I felt really comfortable watching it with a bunch of other boys.
Well,
yeah.
Then
because it feels good.
It's so satisfying
to watch pornography with men, and it's not, and nobody takes it out and masturbates at all. You just watch it as if it's the news,
right?
And that's the ideal way to watch pornography.
Stepping back into reality, actually, Wednesday night you have camp here.
TV camp. Yeah,
not in the studio here, but at your home.
My home. Yes. Yeah.
And you have people of all sexes come and watch theme movies at your house.
Yes, we do.
You
different
like
movies? Yeah.
For lack of a better word, bad movies.
Yeah, I mean, I do enjoy bad movies, but they got to be the right kind of bad movie. You know, I don't like. I don't like blandness. I like movies that really try for something and both good and bad. But if they're trying for something and it fails, I'd rather watch that than something that's just obvious.
That's kind of your philosophy in general, right? That's why you like Sylvester Stallone, for example, as an actor.
I love Stallone, yeah.
Because he tries. So
he gives it 100%, and whether I wasn't big on the last Rocky movie, but he was doing it, and you got to respect that.
Yep.
You got to respect that.
Yep. And you kind of take that philosophy in life. It's like the people you respect the most are the ones that go for it.
The ones who go for it. I mean, a lot of people don't think Keanu Reeves is a really great actor, and I would say they're probably right, but I love watching Keanu Reeves. And one of the things I love Keanu Reeves and Keanu Reeves films, even the bad ones. And a big reason for that is he is always committed. Maybe he's not doing the greatest, acting job, but he's always committed. And he never phones it in. And you cannot say that about most of the legendary actors out there. Like De Niro, he's been doing nothing but phoning it in since like 1991.
Yeah.
And Keanu never phones it in.
Who else would you put in that category on the good side?
Of not phoning it in?
Yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, going more into character actors, there's a lot of, like, Paul Giamatti never phones it in,
right.
There's a lot of,
character
Philip
actors.
Philip Seymour Hoffman never really phones it in, I don't think. And
a character actor is, by nature, phone it in less, I would think, in order to be.
Well, it depends
actor.
Because you get like it depends. Sometimes like Lance Henriksen's a character actor, mm-hmm. I would say, but he sort of was associated with a genre like science fiction and horror. So he does a lot of straight to video movies, and it's very clear he's phoning it in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean it's phoned in. Yeah, as phoned in as you could. This isn't really going to read because this is a radio program or a podcast or was podcast or
podcast. Yeah. Podcast.
And so
you do so many of these, you don't even know.
I don't know where I am at any given point. But there was this movie called I think it was called The Mangler 2.
The second one
is a sequel to a theatrically released movie called The Mangler, which is about a killer laundry machine. Uh-huh. Which I love that movie. It's got Robert Englund and Ted Levine, and it's this is an atrocious film, but it's awesome because it's about a killer laundry machine. There's no other movie about a killer machine. Even Mangler 2 is not about a killer laundry machine. It's like a computer, a killer computer. It's junk. And Lance Henriksen plays the principal of this high school, and he's like cursing out all the kids. The kids are in trouble. The main characters are in trouble, and he's telling them they're in trouble. And then one of them wises off, and he says, "Get out!" And he points at the wall. and then they use this take because he points at the wall. He looks, realizes he's pointing at the wall, and the door's on the other side of the room. And he just turns his finger to the other side of the room. And it's clear that Lance Henriksen didn't care, but the people who were making the movie thought it was hilarious that he didn't care so much he didn't know where the door was in the set.
Could he just be a bad actor?
No, I think Lance Henriksen can be a very, very good actor. I mean, I certainly thought he was great as Bishop in Aliens, which he's very famous for. And I thought he was good in Pumpkinhead. Which is, you know, a bad movie, but he was not phoning it in. He was doing a good job as a vengeful dad, you know,
right.
These teens, like, ran over his kid with their mm-hmm. motorbikes, and
right.
he calls Pumpkinhead up from the depths of hell, which is in a well at the top of a mound outside of this witch's house. And,
of course.
That's where Pumpkinhead is. If you want Pumpkinhead to, like, do your revenge bidding, that's where you have to go. It's not a choice. It's where he is. So, but I believed he was a very angry, vengeful father, but then was ultimately torn about his own, you know, vengeance. And I thought it was a good performance. And, you know, and he was in Near Dark, which is probably one of the best vampire movies ever made.
I don't know that movie.
It was directed by Kathryn Bigelow, who I think won Best Director for Hurt Locker.
Oh, yeah.
And her Hurt Locker, won Best Picture, but she directed...
I think she got Best Director.
I think so.
She's the first woman.
I think you're right. But in any event, she directed Near Dark in the 80s, which is an awesome movie.
Well, we're going to have to... some Wednesday night, we'll have to have Vampire Night.
Yeah, that's sure. Yeah, that would be great. Vampires. I love vampires.
You currently watch that a vampire show, right?
I watch True Blood.
True Blood, that's a vampire show.
And I watch. I more recently watched the MTV series Death Valley, which has vampires, werewolves, and zombies in it.
Wow!
Yes, it's a very funny.
They went all the way.
I enjoy it. It's way better than The Walking Dead, which is a bunch of people talking. But Death Valley's got people fighting zombies. And vampires and werewolves.
Wow!
Take that, Walking Dead.
Okay, so, you know, it's interesting. You obviously, you're an actor,
uh-huh.
So you act. You also love watching a good picture.
I do.
And you love talking about movies and actors.
I mean,
the whole thing. You love the whole medium.
Right? I do. I love movies.
You do.
I'm a movie lover.
You love to be in them, and you love watching them.
Yeah, yeah.
And you love writing them.
Yeah, I love it all.
Love it all. So I also know, in knowing you, that you love music also.
I love music. Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm thinking about the guys that phone it in and how – I'm thinking about you in general, and the people that you tend to be attracted to are the people that don't phone it in general. In life,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
In the things they do. You can appreciate somebody doing something bad if they're given it.
That's what I'm saying.
Everything.
You
yes.
know, it's like you watch an old Ed Wood movie, and those movies are train wrecks caused by horrible, horrible incompetence.
Right.
they're so incompetent, it's unbelievable. But every single one of them has got heart. He's got heart. He was a guy who loved the movies and just wanted to make movies. And he didn't understand his intense budgetary constraints and didn't understand how to actually construct a movie. But he did anyway. And they're very entertaining movies.
Did you like that movie about him, Johnny Depp?
Oh, the Ed Wood. Yeah, I did like Ed Wood. I thought it was a good movie, yeah.
Pretty accurate?
Yeah, I thought it was fun, yeah. And I knew a lot about Ed Wood going into it. So, yeah, I thought they nailed it. I really enjoyed that movie.
Really? So I was going toward music. So give me who doesn't phone it in musically and who does? Just a couple examples.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I'm not as well-versed in who musicians phoning it in or not phoning it in.
Who do you buy? Who don't you buy?
Well, I mean, you know, but it's also there's genre. I mean, I would, you know, I went to see Arthur Christmas, you know, that cartoon show. I took my kid to see Arthur Christmas. And before Arthur Christmas, I was forced to sit through a Justin Bieber video of him doing Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Mm-hmm. Which is a, like, 3D video. We didn't see it in 3D, so it was even dumber.
you didn't even get that.
It's a crappy video anyway, and an annoying song. And I'm not saying Bieber's phoning it in, but that music, especially, you know, covers of old... I'm not going to have a Michael Bublé Christmas. I'm sorry. I'm not doing that. You know, I'll just listen to Bing Crosby. I don't need to hear more versions of those stupid songs. I think that's phoning it in. I think, you know, it's harder to judge too, especially, you know, when you have someone and their sophomore album isn't as good and it feels more thrown together and phoned in. But I think, but also that's like, they were working on that first album for 15 years before they were discovered and then boom, it hits. And then the record company is going, we need another one, because if we don't get another one right away, we won't make a gazillion dollars.
Right, and then
so
they
yeah, I would say that's phoning it in, but I understand that.
Right,
I understand that way more than like the misery that Robert De Niro usually seems like he's in
just by being
in a movie. Right. It's like dude, you don't need any more money. You can stop. Right. All you have to do is stop. That's it, you know? And whatever rich man habits he has, maybe he's got a Nick Cage thing where he buys, you know, every house he sees. But you just gotta rein it in and just, you know, stop buying houses and you can stop acting and then you won't be sad.
Yeah. I'm actually thinking, I'm going back to the music thing. With you, it's not phoning it in with music. It's the overproduced...
auto-tuning
the human element taken out of music.
Yeah, and I like soulful stuff. I mean, I'm more of a rock guy than a pop guy anyway. I mean, I can appreciate pop music. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, honestly, I you know, prefer the pop music of the 80s to the pop music of now, because, you know, back then, you know, even though there were a lot of synthesizers and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't all ultimately filtered through computers and auto-tuned. Right. I don't like auto-tuning. I don't get it. I want to hear the imperfections in someone's voice, because that's – you hear the imperfections and you hear the soul of the musician.
Right, that's what rock and roll is.
And auto-tuning removes the soul. You know, I get, oh, well, yeah, that's perfect. But what, you know, perfection is not, that's not what art, any form of art is about. It's not about striving for perfection, because there's no such thing.
Right.
It's all subjective. So why auto-tune it? Sing, Justin Bieber. Just sing.
Sing, Justin. Sing.
Just let us know. Let us know.
Gosh, now I'm stepping back. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm going in circles here. But, you know, was it a trilogy or that I brought to you was Billy Jack?
Oh, the Billy Jack film trilogy.
How did you feel about Billy Jack in terms of
Billy Jack? I mean, you introduced me to Billy Jack. I'd never heard of Billy Jack before that, and you were saying he was sort of a drive-in staple, and they're lower budgeted movies, and he's sort of a part Native American, Dirty Harry type, I suppose, and I certainly appreciated that.
Did you which movie did you enjoy the most?
I think of the three, I liked I liked the first one the most.
Born Losers,
yes, I thought it was the best one. I mean, the problem that all of those movies have is that there's not enough
asking.
Billy Jack.
Yeah.
The first one spends, and because I found the biker gang in the first in Born Losers so entertaining, right. That's why I liked it, because it was the most homoerotic biker gang I've ever
they
seen.
They actually
in my
made
life.
Out in one scene.
Yeah, two guys make out, and it's like, what?
They get drunk and start.
What is?
Tongue
what kind of biker gang is this? it's a fascinating story of the biker gang, and then Billy Jack shows up occasionally and hurts them. But then the second one, instead of a biker gang, it was like Howard Hesseman and a bunch of hippies doing improvs.
Right.
That derailed the movie, and that was a
that
was way less interesting than the derailment that was the biker gang in the first one. And then the third one, that was just boring. That's just straight up boring.
They tried to act.
Yeah, and there was no action in it. It was like a drama. It became like a drama.
The thing I liked about it is E.G. Marshall was in it, though.
I do enjoy the works of E.G. Marshall.
Yeah, E.G.
Yeah, he's marvelous in Creepshow.
With the
cockroaches.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like the cockroaches.
That's disturbing.
Yeah,
remember that one?
Yeah, they come out of his skin and his face.
Yeah.
You know,
his mouth.
Yeah.
His eyeballs.
I don't know how they got in there, but... That's gross.
Yeah, it is. That's gross.
That's gross.
But E.G. did not phone that one in.
No, I don't think E.G. ever phoned it in. He didn't phone it in Two Evil Eyes. He didn't phone it in Christmas Vacation. He's awesome in Christmas Vacation.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Is he still alive? E.G. Marshall?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
I'm not sure, though, but I don't think so.
He's one of those guys that was always old. In every movie, you never see a young E.G. Marshall.
No, you don't. It's like William Hickey. You never saw a young William Hickey. Or like Abe Vigoda.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know.
Even when he probably was young.
I don't think he was. I think it was... He came out of his mom's vagina an old man. It was a very difficult birth.
Let's see here. Would you rather lose your sense of taste or touch?
I think I'd rather lose my sense of taste than touch. Because for one, I would eat a lot less, I think, and be easier to maintain my figure.
That's important.
It's important to maintain your figure.
It is.
Yeah.
How about your arms or your legs?
Would I rather lose my arms or my legs?
Uh-huh.
I guess my legs. Because you can't jack off with your legs.
That's a good reason.
Yeah.
So, in closing. Because we could go on and on here.
Obviously.
I'm having a good time.
I'm having a great time. This is a great show.
You're a good interview.
Oh, thank you.
You're a good interview.
Thank you.
I've had a lot of people on my show. And you're one of my favorites.
Oh, thank
you.
Really?
My absolute favorite.
Oh, really? Everybody you've had on this? All the famous musicians and everything?
Yes, you're a good interview. I enjoy talking to you. Two questions. How do you feel about my music?
Well, you have a lot of different music. I mean,
I
you have the Rochambeau music, mm-hmm. But then you have other bands. You've been in other bands.
Mm-hmm.
Rochambeau, I really enjoy it. It's comical and boisterous and energetic, and I love it. But I love your other stuff, too. You're more serious standard stuff. You're a great musician and great singer.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And I enjoyed seeing you in The Wizard of Oz as well. The Cowardly Lion.
The Cowardly Lion was a good fit for me.
Yeah, it's like a part that's tailor made for you.
Yes, and I went on to do that again in another theater and took some of your notes with me too, and up here in the old Penobscot.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I was even a little bit better.
That's awesome.
You give me a few notes. That was solicited. You don't give unsolicited notes. That's one thing.
No, I don't like that.
No.
I did a one-man show a number of years ago,
uh-huh.
And this girl I went to college with came to the show,
uh-huh.
And then she emailed me a bunch of notes, and I was like, I already did the show,
right.
And I'm not doing it anymore, so notes are not going to help me at all.
No.
Unless if you want to produce the show and put up money and get people in the seats and have a real run of the show, then you can give me some notes. But you can't just come to the show and give me notes.
Right.
Yeah. Or if you unless I ask for them. If you ask for them because you want to improve something. Right. Yeah. But I was a little taken aback by that.
I find your notes very helpful. I had the Rochambeau Variety Show, which I did two of, and my second one was better, largely because of some notes you gave me.
Right,
you saw that I incorporated those notes, and you must have thought...
Yes.
I helped here.
I helped.
I helped a little bit.
The notes helped. Yeah, yes. Yeah. I like being helpful. Yeah.
So, if you had it all to do over again, what would you do differently? Todd Robert Anderson.
If I had it all to do over differently, what would I do? I think really the only thing I would change is I would have started smoking more marijuana as a young child.
When should you have started that, do you think?
Four.
Four.
Or maybe just, you know, it's hard to smoke when you're four. Maybe just edibles. Do edibles.
Yeah. Do you kind of hold that against your parents that
they didn't give me pot brownies? Yeah, I think that was I think they could have done a better job as parents, right. And that would have been my first, you know, fix is give the kids some edibles.
The kids some edibles. I don't know if they had as many edibles then as they do now.
Well, it's not that hard to take some pot and bake it into a brownie.
That's true.
I if you don't want your kids to smoke it, you right. should bake it into desserts.
Exactly. Todd, it's been a pleasure having you here.
Thanks for having me on your show.
All the best of luck to you going forward with your family, with your career, with
Thank
your
you.
Novels, everything, man.
You
I
too.
Wish you the best.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Todd.